It's Wednesday, July 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Barack Obama prepares to speak further about the Iran nuclear deal as members of Congress criticize it. China continues its human rights crackdown.
The senior leadership thinks that they can do this and get away with it, and they may well be right. You know, we don't see other governments responding in ways that impose even a serious reputational price.
And a Jamaican singer's new release hits the top of the charts. It's all ahead. U.S. President Barack Obama today will comment further about the historic Iran nuclear deal when he holds a news conference at the White House to continue promoting the agreement. Many Republicans and some Democrats in Congress, as well as leaders such as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, disagree with Mr. Obama's assessment of the deal that was reached by Iran and world powers Tuesday in Vienna. He contends it will cut off all pathways Iran has to develop a nuclear weapon. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with Daryl Kimball, director of the Arms Control Association in Washington, about the nuclear deal forged in Vienna.
Well, I think this is a very strong, balanced agreement that meets the bottom lines of both sides. At the fundamental level, it restricts Iran's uranium enrichment program, its stockpiles, its potential pathway to produce plutonium in such a way that Iran is at least 12 months away from amassing enough material for a bomb. And there is a very robust IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency inspection system, the likes of which we have not seen before. It will also clarify and resolve questions that have been lingering about past Iranian activities regarding experiments involving research that could be used to make nuclear weapons. All these things have to be achieved by Iran before sanctions are lifted. Incentives for Iran to follow through. So I think this is a very strong win-win agreement for both sides that should hold up over the test of time.
Secretary of State John Kerry, in his remarks in Vienna, said no part of this agreement relies on trust. He's made it clear that if Iran fails to comply, the sanctions will be reimposed. Now, this means intrusive inspections. I have to hearken back to the Iraq days when David Kaye was a weapons inspector and would literally barge into facilities. Do you think that we're going to see David Kaye-type inspections with Iran under this agreement?
Iraq was a defeated country. The inspection program there was different. This is an inspection program over a known nuclear program. It's also designed to prevent an unknown secret program. The IAEA will have many tools in its arsenal. They're going to have information, real-time monitoring, inspections across all of Iran's nuclear facilities and across their nuclear fuel cycle, from uranium mining to producing centrifuges to the enrichment of uranium that will be allowed. And they have the opportunity for short-notice on-site inspections, including inspections of military sites if the IAEA has information that they're engaged in an activity they're not supposed to be engaged in. That will be managed access. What's also important is there is an adjudication commission designed to resolve any disputes that might arise, and it specifies that those disputes have to be resolved within 30 days or else the complaining party, maybe the U.S. or France, has a right to consider the lack of access a violation of the agreement. So that is a new and novel component. I think it gives the U.S. and others, should give us a great deal of confidence that Iran cannot get away with any significant noncompliance.
Daryl Kimball, director of the Arms Control Association here in Washington. Well, meanwhile, members of Congress are divided over the landmark international nuclear deal with Iran. Most Republican lawmakers are strongly rejecting it as dangerous, but most Democrats say they're reserving judgment until they get a chance to study the details. VOA congressional correspondent Cindy Sain has reaction from Capitol Hill.
As news from Vienna of an Obama administration-backed deal on Iran reverberated around the U.S. Capitol Tuesday, Republican leaders wasted no time in rejecting it. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
The Iranians appear to have prevailed in this negotiation, maintaining thousands of centrifuges, enriching their threshold nuclear capability instead of ending it, reaping a multi-billion dollar windfall to spend freely on terrorism.
At a House Foreign Affairs Committee hearing on the implications of a deal, Chairman Ed Royce was skeptical.
The bet that the administration is taking is that in 10 or 15 years, we will have a kinder, gentler Iran.
After the hearing, former Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns told VOA he supports the deal.
I also think we're better off trying to resolve this diplomatically, peacefully, than by using force.
Meanwhile, President Obama warned Congress not to try to kill the agreement.
So I will veto any legislation that prevents the successful implementation of this deal.
This, in turn, angered Republicans, including Congressman Chris Smith.
This is day one. He's already talking veto. If it's such a good deal, why not persuade Congress and, by extension, the American people about its contents? Instead, veto card goes right up.
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton led the Democratic response.
This does put a lid on the nuclear program, but we still have a lot of concern about the bad behavior.
The House and Senate have 60 days. Once the nuclear accord has been formally submitted to them, to approve it, reject it, or take no action. If they reject it, President Obama could then veto a congressional resolution of disapproval. It would then take a hard-to-get two-thirds majority in both chambers to override a presidential veto. Cindy Sain, VOA News, on Capitol Hill.
Well, joining me here in the studio is our social media editor, Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's the reaction to all this?
Well, we heard some of the reaction from the political world, and we looked yesterday on our show, hashtag VOA, at some of the reactions from our viewers and from the just general public on social media. And the word that kept coming up again and again was historic, used both in good and bad ways. Some people saying this is a historic deal. It could pave the way for a better Iran-U.S. Relations in the future. One young woman saying the deal is historic, but it needs to go through Congress first, so let's not get ahead of ourselves. But this is the word that people keep using across social media. And as I said, we discussed this on our show, hashtag VOA, and people can watch that full show at voanews.com/hashtag VOA for our full show on Iran, where we talked a lot about the social media implications. We talked about social media in Iran, what might happen now, the people are reacting to the deal in Tehran, how that might change, and how people are expressing their opinions there. Another trending topic this morning, hashtag Prime Day. Now, Amazon.com, the online retailer, has a service Prime where it offers free two-day shipping and a bunch of other perks for a paid, you have to pay every year for this service. And they have introduced this Prime Day where they promised there would be more deals than Black Friday, which is the day after Thanksgiving here in the U.S., which is the big shopping day kickoff for the holiday season. And the reason why this is trending is because people went on to Amazon.com, looked at these deals and said, this is not exactly what I want to buy. Some of the things that people are pointing out on social media that are the hot deals Amazon's offering include a VCR rewinder, Tupperware, and maternity products. So people are saying, this is not what I expected. It's, a lot of the products that are discounted, they're saying, are very specific. They were expecting to get, tablets and phones and cameras and things at cheap prices, and that's not necessarily the case. So a lot of people striking back against that. Something else that was trending this morning, Donald Trump is in a bit of hot water. He tweeted out a picture of the White House that had some soldiers in front of it saying we need to take back America. The problem with that was that the soldiers apparently were Nazi soldiers. It was part of a stock footage photo, and he thought they were U.S. soldiers. So quickly having to take that down after social media pointed that out. Another social media gaffe from him, and an unfortunate one, but one that he corrected very quickly.
Yeah, that's the thing about social media.
You will find out very quickly if you made a mistake, and you will have to respond just as quick, absolutely.
All right, thank you, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute. Flight controllers at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physical Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland, celebrated as history was made on Tuesday, July 14th at 11:49 UTC, when NASA's New Horizons spacecraft made its closest approach to Pluto. The New Horizons is the fastest spacecraft that has ever been launched. It's hurtling through the Pluto system at more than 53,000 kilometers per hour. After traveling nearly a decade, some 5 billion kilometers, into the far reaches of our solar system, the first craft to be sent to Pluto flew within 12,500 kilometers above the surface of the dwarf planet. Once New Horizons processes all the information from the flyby, it will send back nearly 10 years' worth of data it has gathered since its mission began in January 2006. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear the new hit song, Cheerleader. The last week has seen a number of human rights-related controversies in China. On Friday, more than 100 human rights lawyers and activists were detained or questioned. Some of the country's most well-known rights lawyers have been caught up in the crackdown. And on Sunday, a widely revered Tibetan monk, Tenzin Delek Rinpoche, died 13 years into a jail sentence his supporters say was politically motivated. Sophie Richardson is China director of Human Rights Watch, and she spoke to me about the developments. At the end of last week, there have been more than 100 human rights lawyers and activists have been arrested, have been detained in recent days. Why is this happening at this time, do you think?
Well, I think it's happening now largely because the senior leadership thinks that they can do this and get away with it, and they may well be right. You know, we don't see other governments responding in ways that impose even a serious reputational price on Beijing for silencing, you know, some of its most, I think, thoughtful and peaceful critics.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has been criticized by a number of rights organizations, including yours, for, you know, increasing crackdowns since he became the leader of China. Does this seem just further indication of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, the kinds of behavior that we're now seeing considered problematic by authorities, you know, representing cases in court or peaceful public protests, are getting so much harsher a response from authorities, even if it's on subjects with which independent voices and those authorities agree. For example, corruption. You know, many members of the New Citizens Movement who were detained fairly early on in Xi Jinping's leadership were calling in public for some of the same kinds of things that Xi Jinping and his allies themselves were calling for. And, you know, why they're sitting in prison while he's running the country, I think, highlights the party's desire to control all messages and ideas publicly. And I think the fact that that has gotten worse at a time when, frankly, the Chinese government doesn't really face significant threats or, you know, isn't exactly allowing, you know, the organization of opposition groups, I think is a remarkable statement, not just about their power, but about their paranoia.
On Sunday, a Tibetan monk, Tenzin Delek Rinpoche, died at a prison near Chengdu. Do you believe an investigation should take place into the circumstances of his death?
Yes, absolutely. We're calling immediately for an independent international investigation. He had clearly been in deteriorating health for quite some time. His family had filed a petition for medical parole to which there was no satisfactory response. And I think the fact that he died without their even having had an opportunity to see him for almost a year and a half is a pretty potent statement about the callousness of the Chinese authorities. And, you know, it's worth noting that he's not the only peaceful activist to have died in detention recently. Obviously, there was the terrible case of Cao Shanli, who had wanted to participate in the UN review of China's human rights record, who died you know, shortly after being released from detention in March of 2014. And we believe an independent investigation is the only appropriate response as to why this keeps happening. and ideally to prevent it from happening again, since we know there are many others in detention now who are in seriously ill health, like Puter Chang and Gao Yu.
And we should note that members of Congress yesterday expressed outrage over the death of the monk, and they also held a moment of silence in memory of him.
Yes, I think yesterday was a pretty remarkable demonstration, you know, not just of the typical concern or frustration that members of Congress or members of Parliament have expressed over the years about China, but I think there was a real degree of abject horror amongst a lot of people in the room that Tenzin Belakpempache had been allowed to die in detention.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Sophie, for speaking with me today.
Happy to do so.
Sophie Richardson is China Director of Human Rights Watch. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
International Edition. Jamaican artist Omi has a song called Cheerleader that has quickly made its way to number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 singles chart. International Edition's David Byrd and Larry London chat about the song and Omi's rise to pop stardom.
He's from Jamaica and his hit is just burning up the charts. Omi. Larry, who is Omi?
Well, let me explain it to you, David. I'm glad you asked. Omi is Omar Samuel Paisley, and he's from Jamaica, as you mentioned. He has a special distinction. His record is the longest consecutive number one in the UK from a Jamaican artist in chart history in the UK.
More than Bob Marley.
That's right. 4 weeks consecutively. Number one on the charts. Right now, number two in the United States on the Billboard Hot 100, but it is the number one selling song in the United States, and it's called Cheerleader. And there are a lot of prognosticators who are predicting that this particular song will move to number one next week.
When I need motivation, my one solution is my queen, cause she stays strong. Yeah, yeah. She is always in my corner, right there when I wanna. All these other girls are tempting, but I'm empty when you're gone. And they say, do you need me? Do you think I'm pretend? Do I make you feel like cheating? I'm like, no, not really, cause oh, I think that I found myself a cheerleader. She is always right there when I need her. Oh, I think that I found myself a cheerleader. She is always right there when I need her. She walks like a model. She grants my wishes like
he's from Jamaica.
Yes, he is.
Is his style, do you think, does he borrow from some of his heritage? People like, you know, Bob Marley, Shabba Ranks, people like that. Or is he more on the kind of the John Legend end of that kind of smooth
type? He's a more modern time, modern day reggae sounding singer. He doesn't do it in the traditional Bob Marley vein, but reggae's got a certain distinctive style. And there's no mistaking the fact that this is a reggae song. And recently, I mean, here in the United States, we haven't been quick to embrace reggae songs. There have been few and, you know, not many. But recently, it's Shaggy and Sean Paul and Magic a couple of years ago with a hit called Root. So this is the first time in several years that a reggae song has made it to almost the top. And as I say, many people think next week we're going to be saying this is the number one song.
Who does he list as his influences? Does he draw from other people, or is it just kind of, this is my thing?
This is his thing, and there are some, in fact, I was talking to Ray McDonald, who said that this is probably a one-hit wonder kind of guy, because we hadn't heard of him before. This is a song that he actually released originally in 2012, but now he's re-released it with Felix Jaehn, who's a very famous German producer. And so the song's been remixed and remade, and now, bang, it's near the top of the chart.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for that. That is OMI, and that's O-M-I.
O-M-I.
Okay.
O-M-I.
And if you have any questions or comments about OMI, or you want to hit Larry up on Twitter, that's at VOA underscore music. You can also watch Larry and listen to Larry do Border Crossings, his show where he has all kinds of people from the music and entertainment world come in. That's on www.voanews.com. Larry, thank you.
Thank you, David.
That I found myself a cheerleader. She is always right there when I need her. Oh, I think that I found myself a cheerleader. She is always right there when I need her.
That's the music of OMI. And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Burundi's controversial presidential election has been postponed until July 21st amid escalating violence there. Soldiers and unidentified gunmen clashed recently in Kayanza province near the border with Rwanda. The governor there said the gunmen had crossed from Rwanda, a charge denied by Rwandan leaders, but which could fan fears that the political infighting and street protests against President Pierre Nkurunziza's running for re-election could escalate into a wider conflict. Burundi's opposition is boycotting the election, saying that Nkurunziza's decision to seek a third term is unconstitutional. The announcement of his re-election bid in April triggered weeks of demonstrations, some deadly. The president cites a court ruling saying he can run again. Presidential spokesman Gervais Abayeho said Nkurunziza signed a decree postponing the voting, once scheduled for July 15th, in response to a request from the leaders of the East African Community partner states. The African nations had sought a delay until July 30th to give Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni time to try to mediate a dialogue between President Nkurunziza and the opposing groups in an effort to restore peace and security. Abayeho said such a delay would be beyond constitutional limits. The United States is deeply concerned by reports that fighting has broken out in several areas of Burundi and by recently broadcast remarks by Burundians threatening to use force against their government. We urge all parties there to commit themselves to constructive dialogue to resolve peacefully the political impasse that threatens to unravel the peace and stability ushered in by the implementation of the Arusha Agreement over a decade ago. The United States condemns violence as a means to attain political goals and opposes any attempt to seize power through extra-constitutional means. We strongly oppose any armed activity or incursions into Burundi and will seek to hold accountable those responsible for gross human rights abuses.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.